You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
There are a lot of ways that you can look at Arkansas's progress under Sam Pittman, but here's one. In trophy games coming into this season, Arkansas had lost 15 straight. They had lost to Texas A&M, Missouri, and LSU every game each of the last five seasons. They lost to Texas A&M even longer than that. But now they've got a chance next week when Missouri comes to Fayetteville to win all three trophies in the same season, and that's never happened. They won the Golden Boot on Saturday 16-13 over the Tigers, and now the Razorbacks are 7-3 moving into their game against Alabama. Matt Jones, along with Clay Henry of Hogs Illustrated and Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports. Clay, you were in Baton Rouge the other night. What were your takeaways from the game?
Yeah, it was you have to kind of define what you think is pretty sometimes. And I can remember sitting with Rob Smith years ago when he was defensive coordinator at Arkansas, and he had told me, he says, "You still have a shutout." I was like, "A shutout? What kind of animal is that?" Now, Georgia's had some shutouts this year, but it wasn't long after that Arkansas shut out Ole Miss and LSU in back-to-back weeks. But don't have to have a shutout to have a great defensive performance, and I think that's what it was really for both teams. And my takeaway is it's old-school football. You win with defense and kicking game. And I think everybody gets the kicking game part, but it was also defense that eventually set up the offense with those turnovers.
I think Sam Pittman hit it on the money that it was ugly and beautiful and everything in between, but it was a lot, you know, primarily it was pretty ugly. Like both offenses, you know, struggled to maintain drives, and neither team was really good on third down whatsoever. And one of the things I've always, you know, go back and look at all of KJ Jefferson's passes, and in previous weeks, he's been pretty good, you know, moving the chains through the air or with his feet on third down. And I think he accounted for all of Arkansas's third down conversions, if I'm not mistaken. He had a couple runs, and there was just one pass completed, I think, to Tyson Morris for like 9 yards on third and six. Other than that, Arkansas had to kind of get things done on first and second down, which in the past has been a struggle, especially running the ball on first down in previous games. It was again the other night. And LSU really bottled up KJ for the most part in the run, and Dominic Johnson, he had to earn every single yard that he got. And it's a good thing that he runs so hard, or he wouldn't have gotten the 40 plus yards that he did. But Arkansas's defense was lights out, and Arkansas's linebackers were phenomenal. All of those guys finished with 10 or more tackles, and Bumper finished with 13, which put him at 100 for the year, 21 more than Hayden Henry, who's second on the team. And Bumper had a couple of tackles for loss. I thought Monteric Brown made some money the other night. I'm not sure that LSU completed a pass against him. I think he had a couple balls that he defended in the end zone, and obviously he picked one off. But in Miles Slusher, I think you're starting to see the growth from him. So you're starting to feel pretty good about him replacing or filling the spot that Jalen Catalon left. But the defense was outstanding. And you know, it's some of those veteran guys like those linebackers, and then Buster came up and played well. And I thought we, you know, finally got, you know, another pretty good performance from John Ridgeway in the middle, which makes a big difference.
Clay, I wanted to go back to something you were talking about, and that's beauty of a football game being in the eye of the beholder. And it was really interesting to me to listen to Sam Pittman during his Monday news conference talk. And basically he posed this hypothetical. He said, "I know a lot of people have called the win ugly." He said, "But really the only ugly thing about the win was offense." He said, "The defense and the special teams played outstanding." And the hypothetical was this: would you rather have an ugly offensive game and win 16-13 like they did against LSU, or have a pretty offensive game and lose like they did in the Ole Miss game earlier this season, 52-51? That really stood out to me.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. And, you know, it's, yeah, you'd like to love to have a, you know, 33-0 game or a 17-0 game like those shutouts I mentioned, where you can, you know, it's pretty clear. But it's what you kind of look at is that Arkansas's had three games decided by the last play of the game, and they've won two of those. That's pretty good. I mean, it's like, you know, we go through a baseball season and we'll chart one run games. And if you're two or three games ahead of the opposition in those one run games, you're probably going to have a really good season, because there's going to be a, you know, some other games that you won by decisive scores. But it's those end of game situations for a second year head coach. Remember, Sam Pittman, this is his, we're part of the way through his second season of being a Division I SEC head coach. And they've gotten it right two out of three times in end of game situations, including their first overtime this year. And I think that's how you measure a coach. And does he survive in advance in late game situations? And you know, we tend to criticize the most for clock errors and bonehead calls, and he doesn't make those. He's shown that he has the capability of being a head coach in the SEC, which I think is the major news of the Sam Pittman era. They play hard, and he doesn't screw up the games.
You can't discount beating LSU, even though LSU is they're not the LSU that we're used to this year. I know they're 4-5 coming into the game. They're 4-6 now. They're going to have to beat Louisiana, Monroe, and Texas A&M just to make a bowl game. Weird season for them. I think it's a weird season for any team when you announce that you're letting the coach go in the middle of the season. And then it gets even weirder whenever, in LSU's case, you let him stay on for the rest of the year the way they've done with Ed Ogeron. I think in all other instances of a coach being fired this year, they're gone. There's an interim coach. And so it's a really unique situation at LSU. But I still don't think you can discount beating LSU because of the athletes that they have on the field. And defensively, they're playing really well right now. I mean, I don't know that you could ask for two better defensive performances than LSU's put together the last couple of weeks against Alabama and Arkansas.
You earned that victory. And I think that's what you're saying, Matt. And it's still a victory in Baton Rouge and Tiger Stadium at night. And you had to come from behind. You were dominated by all rights in the first half and somehow held tough, showed some grit, and came back. And I've seen a lot of teams just wilt in that same situation. Now it's I think that you know, Scotty talked about KJ Jefferson. He was the best player on the field. They could not handle him in the critical situations, and he made plays when they were behind and when they came after him and they couldn't get him on the ground. I give KJ a lot of credit for his performances at Ole Miss and LSU in hostile environments. And you just think, well, he's still a young quarterback. And you can just remember how much criticism Bo Nix took for road losses. And there's not a tougher place to play than Death Valley at night. And for KJ to perform on that stage and not make the critical mistakes that get your team beat, even under pressure. And you saw Garrett Nussmeier throw it to Monteric Brown that cost them the game. So, you know, I give KJ credit for being the best player on the field. Couldn't take advantage of Treylon Burks' you know, probably having an advantage over the cornerback that covered him or the nickel. But it's still KJ was the dude, in my opinion. And you should throw out your chest and be proud of that victory at LSU.
It's really interesting watching LSU now, because, you know, given the coaching situation, you would think that a lot of those kids are just kind of, I don't know, maybe not giving, you would think that they would maybe not give 100% effort, but those kids are still playing really hard for Ed. And if you're an LSU fan, you just got to be just kind of kicking yourself. So, like, why did it take this long for the coaching staff to decide, hey, man, we've got all these supreme athletes on defense. I think we're just going to rush. We're going to rush more than the opposing team can, you know, block. and, you know, create a lot of havoc defensively. And that Arkansas kind of really struggled with that. And so that's 2 weeks in a row. LSU's opponents have not handled that particularly well. But getting back to Clay's point on KJ, he was really magician-like, I think, in the pocket when plays broke down. And he was, man, he was awesome. Like the, yeah, just the wherewithal, and just he had the enough poise and composure, you know, after he, you know, eluded like four or five LSU defenders on the touchdown pass to keep his eyes downfield and look for Dominic Johnson, who ran a wheel route. And I think there was a little bit of an underneath route near the Arkansas sideline that, you know, maybe drew a couple LSU defenders, and Dominic was just all alone. KJ put that ball on the money, like I said, after getting by four or five guys. And I think LSU defenders and just defenders that Arkansas play in general are a little bit leery of making those full force contact hits on KJ. And that's 100% what you have to do to bring him to the ground. And when you don't do that, you give him, you know, a second, third chance to make a play, he's going to burn you.
I think sometimes, Scotty, you get to a point and there's nothing to lose. And I think that's how LSU's playing at this point in the season. You know, like, for instance, you'll see teams maybe they'll go for it on fourth down more often if there's nothing to lose. You know, you get toward the end of the season. And I think that may be what you're seeing from LSU defensively right now. Let's talk about Cam Little and the job that he did the other night. I looked this up, and this is borrowing baseball terminology, but a walk-off win, a win when you score on the very last snap of the game. It's only happened 7 times since Arkansas joined the SEC. All of them have been in overtime games, which I guess is probably expected. There have been games where they score a last-second field goal, or maybe they make a last-second defensive stand, and those games are unique too. But, you know, just walk-off wins, these are the ones that have happened. Todd Lauterette kicked a field goal at Mississippi State in overtime in 1996, Chris Balsero at Alabama in 03. Remember in 06, the double overtime game against Alabama where Jeremy Davis had the PAT, Alex Tejada in the Liberty Bowl against East Carolina. Brandon Allen and Austin Allen both had game scoring runs against Ole Miss and TCU in 2015 and 2016. And then Cam Little. Clay, we talked about last week, you know, games when Arkansas will score a touchdown late in the game. Those are all games that we remember really well. All those games that I just listed off, I think those are games that people remember. I think we're in a situation where we've got back-to-back games that people are going to remember quite well for a long time because Arkansas won. And there's a chance that this team's probably going to end up with, I'd say, maybe 8-9 wins this season.
No question, Matt. And the end of game situations are huge. In the Ole Miss game, I don't think people will forget that because it was a near miss. I mean, you had a great comeback. You just can get the 2-point play. But this is a season that is really monumental because of really 4 victories. To beat Texas at home with that crowd, energize the state, and then to end the streak against Texas A&M. And Texas A&M was having some quarterback problems then, but they beat Alabama with that quarterback. So it you have to put a check mark there as a monumental victory. And then the wins over Mississippi State and LSU with the way the games went down to the end and the celebrations and the emotion, that's going to be the tough part for Arkansas this week is that, and I thought this going into the game, didn't write it, but I thought it, that it might be tough for Arkansas to go play well at LSU because of the emotion, the celebration, getting bowl eligible and all the things that went to that, that you're the favorite at LSU. And I don't remember the last time Matt, you're the good one at remembering this kind of stuff. But when the last time Arkansas was a favorite at Baton Rouge and then gone and win, it's incredible that they held together the way they did after such a, you know, an emotional celebration after becoming bowl eligible.
Might have been during the Curly Hallman or Jerry DiNardo years. It's been a long time for sure. Looking ahead now to Alabama this week, I mean, obviously that's going to be a tough game for the Razorbacks. I think you see this every year with Alabama. It seems like they just get better and better and stronger as the season goes along. And that's what I really see from this team. I know that they played LSU close, but you take that game and you kind of look at it a little bit differently because, you know, both teams had 2 weeks to get up for it. It's a rivalry game. In every other game they played since the Texas A&M game, I think they've looked really impressive, especially in the second half of those games. I know Tennessee was kind of close there for a half or so, but they pulled away in the second half and won. And this looks like a really good football team to me, Clay.
Yeah, and Alabama's talent level is supreme. And they don't have as much experience, and they've been hit hard by the draft and graduation. And if you really analyze what they've got in their senior class, it's kind of the dregs. And, you know, it's the guys that are still there. You know, I'll kind of compare it to SEC baseball. If you look around, you know, if you've got a senior at Arkansas's baseball team, well, it's really odd because it means that he wasn't drafted. And he's a holdover. He's a guy that was unwanted and came back for a senior year because, the money wasn't there or there was no money there. And the same thing applies for Alabama football. If you see seniors, it's very rare for them to have a great senior leader that returns. It has to be unusual circumstances, and they don't this year. And that's what they lack on this team is really guys that can hold a season together. And they've overcome that in some ways. Bryce Young is probably going to be a great leader, you know, if he stays a couple of more years. He has ability and he looks like he's got poise, but it's not typical offensive line talent. Their depth has been revealed a little bit. They lost their center and they had to reshuffle really two positions to overcome that. And that was another reason why LSU was successful with their blitzes, is that they were shuffling players in the offensive line. I'm talking about Alabama. But they've got some really great tackle, the talent, the wide receiver Williams and the pass rusher Will Anderson are great, great players and will play on Sunday. And Will Anderson will be on my Heisman ballot. I think he and the Jordan Davis for Georgia are the two dominant defensive players in the country this year. And it's why, you know, Alabama and Georgia might be in the playoff. Just those, they are supreme talents. And I think Sam talked about it. They're really going to have to do some things to game plan for Will Anderson and to keep him from just wreaking havoc with just his standard play.
Yeah, I'm with Clay. Jameson Williams is a freak talent. And whenever I've watched him, it may just be the way that he runs, but it's a little bit Devontae Smith-like. But I think he's, clearly taller than Devontae Smith was. And I think he's a little bit more filled out. That frame is, he's a burner. And I think if we get to see Jameson Williams matched up against Monteric Brown, that might be the matchup to watch other than who's picking up Will Anderson when he tries to get into Arkansas's backfield. And I think Sam Pittman mentioned on Monday that part of the issue with so much pressure in Arkansas's backfield was that Arkansas had to they had to max protect and slide protections. And sometimes that left an Arkansas tight end matched up on LSU's best pass rusher. And I think Arkansas definitely this week is going to scheme to try to get to the point where a tight end is not matched up on a blitzing Will Anderson or another blitzing linebacker, maybe another guy coming off the edge. That's going to be really interesting to watch. And Bryce Young is, like Clay said, he's I think he's going to turn out to be a really good leader for them. He's got so much poise as a young guy. Like, it's not easy to take over Alabama's offense as a true freshman. Like, it's really hard, and he's done really well taking pretty good care of the football. I think Arkansas is going to have to guard against him taking off and running too. you know, if you got, you know, your defensive backs kind of blanket the receivers downfield, which is a chore in itself, but Grant Morgan, Hayden Henry, Bumper Pool are going to have to do a really good job keeping an eye on Bryce Young, because he can really burn you with the run too.
Just to kind of look at matchups, I'm concerned with how Arkansas is able to cover Mechie and Williams, the two wide receivers, and where do you put Monteric Brown? And is Alabama going to move Williams around? You don't want man-to-man with Hudson Clark on Williams, and it's you know, maybe they can't avoid that. So it could be on offense that particular matchup dictates scheme, and that you have to play three safeties high, like they did against Alabama last year. Well, that opens up the running game, and that's Alabama's comfortable with just hammering you in the soft spots because you're outnumbered up front. But you don't have the cornerback play to really support that kind of a scheme. And that's where I think Arkansas fans have been frustrated. It's like, okay, we're playing this soft three-man front with three high safeties. We can't get any pressure. Well, that's what happens when you're not quite where you want to be at cornerback. Now, I was encouraged that Ladarius Bishop came back because he is one of the fastest players on the team. And when Ladarius stays on the field and Hudson can just be a relief valve instead of a guy that plays 60 snaps, I think their defense is really, really strong.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them online at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Whoopee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
It's award season, and there were a couple of notes this week as it pertains to the Razorbacks and national awards. Grant Morgan on Tuesday was named a finalist for the Burlsworth Trophy. It's the second time that Morgan has been a finalist for that award. Of course, he was a finalist last year when Pittsburgh's offensive lineman Jimmy Morrissey won. And Treylon Burks is not among the 10 semifinalists for the Biletnikoff Award. And I think that surprised just about everyone in Arkansas that he wasn't a semifinalist for it. Maybe everyone around the SEC, to be honest with you. I think anybody who's watched Burks play this year will tell you that there just are not a lot of receivers that are much better for him. How do you explain that? I mean, I know that we're all Biletnikoff Award voters and you know, we all had him on our ballots, but how do you explain that he didn't make a semifinalist list for the best player at his position when there's a lot of people that believe he's going to be a first round pick next year?
Yeah, let's explain the different ways these selections go. And the Biletnikoff Award has structured itself to match the voting list of the Heisman Trophy. If you're a Heisman voter, you're most likely a Biletnikoff voter. There's some people that aren't Heisman voters that vote in Biletnikoff, but they've tried to have a large voting list that is regionally balanced, and I give them credit for that. But here's the problem with Heisman voters and Biletnikoff voters. You have voters, which I'm one of those, and I am very aware of Arkansas. I see the Arkansas game. I'm prepared for Arkansas games. I work afterwards, 3 hours. I have consumed Arkansas in a large quantity. So, but it puts a lot of pressure as a voter. How much other football have you seen that day? And how much can you gather from watching SportsCenter or reading national reports to really know what's going on, to see all these wide receivers? I think it's almost impossible to do that. And I think that these awards, the best way to do it is to have a committee that can really focus and dive in on aspects and poll, coaches and really be unbiased in the way they consume all the information, not just how many catches do they have, how many touchdowns do they have, and how many yards. So the ballot comes from the Biletnikoff Award, and it lists 40 players that are, I'd say, I don't know if they call it the semifinalist or what, but they list them by stats.
Basically their watch list. It's basically their watch list.
But they list everybody on their, and you can write in a candidate, but it lists them by receiving yards first to last. And if you look at the way the ballot turned out, and then you have a click screen to click first place, second place, all the way to 10. And I'll guarantee you that people clicked and took those predominantly from that top 10 of receiving yards. It's, if you don't know anything else, that's what you go by. And I think the majority of the voters are just like me, that they haven't seen all these wide receivers in enough detail to really know who they're voting for. And it's just the nature of how they've decided to, and we're going to get to another award and we'll talk about a completely different way of doing it. Right, Matt?
Yes, that is correct. Scotty, what are your thoughts on Biletnikoff here real quick?
Yeah, I think Clay pretty much hit it on the money. The kid at Western Kentucky is having a phenomenal year. Like, he's over 100 receptions, I think maybe over 12 or 1,300 yards, 10-plus touchdowns. If you're busy covering your team, you're covering the team that, you're covering the game of the team that you're is on your beat all day, like, you're not going to get to watch many games. And so you're basically just going off of statistics, like Clay said. And I mean, I probably haven't seen 30 of the guys on that list play this year, but somehow we've got to come up with 10, and pretty much you're going off of names. And I gave the kid at Pittsburgh, I think his name's Jordan Addison, I put him pretty high up on the list because Kenny Pickett at Pittsburgh's having a pretty good year, and he's Kenny Pickett's number one receiver. And so, that's just kind of how I put my ballot together. I had Treylon Burks at number three or number four. He's had a terrific year. His statistics aren't as impressive as some of the other guys on the list, but, his strength of schedule is probably much tougher than some of the other guys. And one of the things I tried to do was look at really good statistics if I wasn't sure on a guy. And on the far right column, they had, I think it was some strength of schedule metric. So you look at impressive stats against a tougher schedule, and that's kind of how I tried to put it together.
I think there's something to be said for playing in marquee games in marquee time slots, and Burks just hasn't had a lot of chances to do that. I mean, let's just backtrack here for a minute before the ballots are due. They played LSU and Mississippi State on SEC Network for two straight weeks. Then there was a bye week. Before that, there was UAPB. Before that, there were three straight 11 a.m. games that they lost to Georgia, Ole Miss, and Auburn. It's really been since the Texas A&M game in late September when you've been able to see Burks stand out in a victory in a marquee type time slot. And so I think that there's probably something to that as well, even though he had some good games. I mean, he had a great game against Ole Miss. I think he had a pretty good performance against Auburn. obviously played well against UAPB, but nobody outside of Arkansas was watching that game. So I think it's a shame that he didn't make it, but he can wipe away his tears with all those dollar bills that he's going to make in the NFL draft, probably coming up in a few months. On Morgan and the Burlsworth Trophy, Clay, we were all surprised that he didn't win the award last year. We've talked about that on this podcast, but let's just talk real quick about the other finalists. It's him. It's Georgia quarterback Stetson Bennett. We've said a few times on this podcast that we think Bennett's probably the one to beat. And then kind of a player that I don't know much about is Troy linebacker Carlton Marshall. That's the other finalist for the Burlsworth Trophy. And one quick note on the Burlsworth, Morgan is the third player who is a multi-time finalist for the Burlsworth Trophy. The others won the award. Baker Mayfield won it in 2015 and 16. And Mayfield, the year that he won the Heisman Trophy, he didn't win it in 2017, the year that he won the Heisman. It went to Luke Falk, who had been a runner-up to him the previous two seasons. And there was no doubt in anybody's mind that Mayfield was the best player who was formerly a walk-on in 2017. But I think they gave it to Falk because, well, we're not going to name him a finalist and not give it to him again. Maybe you get a situation like that with Morgan this year. You know, maybe he gets it because he didn't win it last year. I don't know.
Yeah, Matt, you know, you can, you know, there's arguments about not giving an award based on a career. But I just read the Burlsworth bios on the players, and they talked about their careers. And they talked about Grant's career, and they talked about Carlton Marshall's career, his three-year numbers at Troy. And they talked about Stetson Bennett's career and what he's done. So, I mean, if they're going to use that in their resume to promote them as players, then maybe their selection committee does consider that. And, you know, I've been on All-America's committees, and, you know, I've heard you know, the challenge from the moderator of the group not to look at career numbers, but you can't help but do that. And I think that anybody that says that they don't consider that is probably a rare voter. Now let's look at I said I wanted to talk about the difference between the committees and the panels. Like, so the Biletnikoff is 1,500, 1,600 voters. I'm not sure the number, but it's in that number, right, Matt? And then you look at the selection committee for the Burlsworth, and it's a national panel of former coaches and players. And it is not a vote of a huge number, and it is where they can talk in a room and determine exactly, how they want to weigh one guy versus the other. And it might be the right way to do it, but I think they made the wrong choice last year. We'll see. Maybe they correct their mistake from last year and Grant Morgan's the winner. And, you know, kind of a let's fix something that was not right. But it's tough to go against the number one team in the country's quarterback who's had a perfect season.
I think Grant Morgan had a better 2020 than he's had 2021. I mean, his stats last year were phenomenal. He was an All-American last season, and yet some of his tackles have been taken away this year because of the superb play of the linebackers around him. I mean, Hayden Henry's having a great season. Scotty mentioned Bumper Pool earlier, mentioned that Bumper Pool had gone over 100 tackles. A few more notes on awards. Grant Morgan is also a finalist for the Campbell Trophy. That's also referred to as the Academic Heisman. Basically, it goes to the best scholar athlete in college football. He is a semifinalist for the Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year Award. The Man of the Year Award goes to players based on a number of things, including leadership. I think that's a big consideration in that. And then I got a press release yesterday that Jordan Silver is one of 10 semifinalists for the Manley Award. I'm going to be honest, I've never heard of the Manley Award, but apparently it goes to the nation's best long snapper. And so Jordan Silver, the Razorback senior, is a semifinalist for that award. And then the SEC gives out weekly awards. Cam Little is the SEC Special Teams Player of the Week because he went 3-for-3 and kicked the 37-yard game winner against LSU. He's 6-for-7 now the last 2 weeks. We mentioned last week that Sam Pittman had mentioned there's a reason you give kickers scholarships. And I think the last two games are really a feather in his hat for that belief that he has in recruiting. Cam Little has been really, really big for the Razorbacks this season. You can point directly to him for two of their SEC wins. We'll be back with another podcast later this week to preview Arkansas-Alabama a little bit more. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you again next time.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.